Duffy's Beer presents the morning show on Trib Live Radio featuring Ken Laird, Guy Junker, and Tim Benz. 294 Curry Hollow Road, 412-653-BEER. See all of our weekly specials at duffysbeer.com.
Trib Live Radio's version of the Three Stooges. Ken, Guy, and Tim. The Trib Live Radio Triple Play.
Answer the phone.
I'll answer it when I'm ready.
Yeah? Ooh, I'm ready.
Trib Total Media, see what's next.
Oh, a microphony.
And a phony at the mic. Whoa!
Quiet, numbskulls, I'm broadcasting.
Ken Laird, Guy Junker, Tim Benz. It's Trib Live Radio, brought to you by Duffy's Beer in Pleasant Hills. Our guest at this time, Browns writer Daryl Ryder from 92.3 The Fan in Cleveland. Daryl, I would imagine you've seen quite a few of the 11 straight losses the Browns have had at Heinz Field. Is this the year that they snap the streak?
Well, I don't know if it's going to be the year they snap the streak. Certainly, if Ben Roethlisberger is unable to play, that would help the Browns. But the Browns have their own injuries they're dealing with. And I know Mike Tomlin, even though he's planning for Josh McCown to be the starting quarterback Sunday, I think he's got a sly grin and hoping that he does get to face Johnny Manziel. So it's been since 2003, and the Browns are still the Browns. So I never say this is the year that they're going to come out of Pittsburgh with a W.
Daryl, I've occasionally, since Jimmy Haslam has taken over with the Browns, had these butterfly effect horror dreams and images in my mind that the Rooneys at some point in the future would have sold the team and Haslam would have bought them and been in charge of the Steelers. Am I right to have that kind of horror movie flash through my mind's eye with the way that he has come to Cleveland and the way things have gone since he's taken over?
Well, as I've said here in Cleveland, the apple has fallen far from the Steelers' tree. You know, that was part of the reason everybody was so excited when he bought the team, was the fact that he was a minority owner of the Steelers, and maybe he'll bring the Steeler way to the Browns. In fairness to Jimmy Haslam, look, he's trying to figure it out. He wants to win. Nobody questions that. He is, I can tell you, furious over how this season has played out, but I can also tell you he's concerned. And the reason he's concerned is he's afraid that he missed again with the people that he hired. General manager Ray Farmer, you look at his first-round picks the last 2 years, not good at all. You look at head coach Mike Pettine. The Browns have only won two games since their 7-4 start a year ago when you felt good about hiring Pettine, and hey, maybe they found their coach. Well, everything has completely fallen apart since then. So he's very concerned that he might have to replace people again. And the concern there is not so much you don't keep people for the sake of continuity. If you get it wrong, you got to make the correction as soon as possible. The problem is the Browns have hit the reset button so many times. Who wants this job to begin with? And that's where his concern comes in. So certainly, yeah, you probably should feel pretty good that the Rooneys didn't sell the team to Jimmy Haslam. But, again, to be fair to Jimmy, he is trying to figure this thing out. And, unfortunately, he bought the worst franchise in professional sports when you're talking about off-the-field drama plus the awful winning percentage on the field as well.
Daryl, what do you think is most, if both Manziel and McCown could play Sunday, we were talking about this the other day, is it time to see if Manziel can play or not, or is it still too early in the season to should you still be trying to win games?
I am all for Johnny Manziel playing and put him out there and letting him develop. The problem is, Mike Pettine doesn't feel the guy deserves to start or is ready to start on a full-time basis. And when you go back and you look at some of the film, he misses easy reads. Yesterday in the locker room, and I was stunned that he admitted this. I mean, we all know it because he's 5'11", but he admitted that he's too short to see the whole field. And as he put it, there are times where he has to make face throws because he's not going to be able to see everything, and that was an astonishing admission from a player. I certainly commend him for his honesty and his candor, but we all knew that when they drafted him, that his size was going to be an issue. But you look at guys like Drew Brees down in New Orleans, who has been able to overcome that difficulty. So I'm all for playing Johnny Manziel, but in fairness to Mike Pettine, if he doesn't feel like Johnny Manziel is ready to start full time, and there's no guarantee, I have a job on January 4, I have to try and win as many football games, and the guy I trust to do it is Josh McCown. And you want to talk about a guy who could say the heck with it and cash his paycheck. He's dealing with rib and shoulder injuries. It's McCown. I credit the guy for actually wanting to get out there. He's fighting to play, and there's no reason for Josh McCown to fight to play. So I'm on board with going with Johnny Manziel. I think Josh McCown has done a yeoman's job. They are 2-7, not because of McCown. And so I do think it's time to let Johnny Manziel develop. But again, Mike Patton fights for his job. So if you don't trust the guy, you certainly can't put him out there right now.
We're talking to Browns writer Daryl Reiter here on Trib Live Radio. Maybe they were trying to trade Joe Thomas for a shorter offensive lineman, Daryl. Was that the case?
No, they weren't trying to trade Joe Thomas, and that's what's interesting about this narrative that certainly was a firestorm for a good 5-6 days here in Cleveland. Look, the Denver Broncos called them and said, hey, we need help with our offensive line. You're going nowhere anytime soon. Would you be interested in trading Joe Thomas? And Ray Farmer, doing his due diligence, said, all right, what are you willing to bring to the table? Denver made an offer. Ray Farmer countered with an absurd offer. Denver said thanks, but no thanks. I talked to Joe Thomas a couple of times. He said he would have been crushed had he been traded. He also said, he understands that they're all commodities and that this is kind of part of the business of the NFL. I don't believe that the Browns, for one second, were shopping Joe Thomas and calling around the league saying, hey, number 73, a future Hall of Famer, is available. Make your best offer. Get your bids in now. I do not believe that that is the case based on people that I've talked to both on as well as off the record. So it's a situation where Ray Farmer was doing his job, and the Denver Broncos weren't willing to pay a king's ransom, so the Browns said thank you, but no thank you.
Crushed if he had been traded from Cleveland? Really?
Yeah, well, I think he'd have to understand and know Joe Thomas a little bit to really understand the context of that. He loves Cleveland. He really does, and he wants to be here. He's suffered through a lot of losing seasons, and they've only had one above 500 finish, and that was when he was a rookie in 2007 when they went 10-6 but still missed the playoffs. He wants to win here, and he wants to be here when the Browns start winning. Unfortunately for Joe, I have no idea when that's going to even be possible. So he's old-fashioned. He's a believer that you're drafted by somebody, you stand by them, you stick with them, you finish your career in one spot, but he also understands there could come a day where he gets traded or cut. But, again, that just speaks to Joe Thomas's character as a person as well as a football player.
Daryl, you mentioned the recent draft picks that they've had. Of the last three, well, I guess they have two first-round picks this past year. How poor have they been, Mingo, Gilbert, Shelton, and Cam Irving?
Yeah, well, let's start with the 2014 class. We see what we see from Johnny Manziel. He's clearly not there yet. Justin Gilbert, he's been relegated to kickoff return duty. They don't even want him. They have put Johnson Batamosi, who might be one of the worst corners I've ever watched. He's a great kid. He's awesome on special teams, but not a good cover corner at all. They have put him on the field at corner before they put Justin Gilbert there. So that tells you where they are with Gilbert, who was taken number 8 overall in the 14 draft. Cameron Irving, he's going to get his first start against the Steelers. Joel Bitonio is out at left guard. Irving, though, will be playing a position where he's not played before, and that is left guard. So look for the Steeler defense to attack that particular position. But again, why are you spending a first-round pick on a backup offensive lineman? Now, the Browns have said that he's basically the insurance policy should Alex Mack walk away at the end of the year, which all of us believe that Mack is going to do. No one believes that he's going to decline that opt-out option that is in that contract or that offer sheet that Jacksonville drew up that the Browns ended up matching a couple of years ago. And then Danny Shelton. He's getting playing time, but he's not been the impact defensive lineman that everyone thought. that he was going to be. I have always maintained, though, it comes down to the supporting cast around him. And I liken him to Phil Taylor and Ataba Rubin, the previous nose tackles for the Browns, in that, yeah, they've pushed the line back, but nobody else around them is able to get home and take advantage of the opportunities created by him. And I think Shelton is in a similar situation, but also Shelton's not making plays in the run game. The Browns still have the worst run defense in the National Football League, so he has certainly underperformed. Barkevious Mingo, the 2013 first-round pick, he's getting some time, but he's not an impact player. We know Brandon Weeden, Trent Richardson are no longer with the team. So seven first-round picks in the last 4 or 5 years, which should have completely rebuilt this franchise, and the Browns are still where they were. They're no further ahead this year than they were before they went into asset acquisition mode 4 or 5 years ago.
Wow.
Darryl, do the players themselves, I'm not talking about fans now, is Steeler Week still an attention grabber? Is that rivalry too non-existent right now that this is just another game?
I think it's another game for the players. For the fans, certainly, it's still a rivalry. Steeler Week always means something to the city of Cleveland. You guys obviously know that. And certainly it's understandable. Playing the Browns means nothing. You look at, oh, Cleveland's on the schedule this week. Ha-ha. Okay, who do we have next week? And that's understandable. The real rivalry in Pittsburgh is with the old Browns. It's with the Baltimore Ravens. And the reason why is because you guys have played meaningful football games against them, whereas the Browns, you know, there's been no meaningful football played between these two teams. So for the fans, certainly a rivalry. My experience going to Pittsburgh, Steeler fans actually feel sorry for the Browns, and they miss the rivalry because it isn't a rivalry anymore. But for the players, it's just another game on the schedule. When we ask them, hey, you know, the history of Browns Steelers and, you know, why the game, and we get the canned answers. Yeah, sure, you know, it's a great rivalry, one of the oldest in the NFL, blah, blah, blah. We know it, you know, make a lot of people happy if we can go down there and win. But it just unfortunately doesn't have the juice that it used to. It certainly doesn't have the juice that I remember when I was a kid. And the only way for that to happen and start to develop that is if the Browns actually win on Sunday and do some damage to the Steelers' playoff hopes. Then, and only then, does this rivalry start to rekindle the days of yore. But we are, in my opinion, a long way away from Browns Steelers coming close to resembling anything that it used to be.
Darryl, always great stuff. Thanks so much. We'll see you at Heinz Field on Sunday.
My pleasure, guys. Look forward to it.
All right, Darryl Ryder from 92.3 The Fan in Cleveland. He's been
that
on the
stuns
beat there
me.
For a while.
Stuns me about the Joe Thomas answer. I would want to get out of Cleveland so badly, and this isn't just a Pittsburgh-Cleveland ha-ha, get you in the ribs thing.
Yeah.
If I'm a good football player like Joe Thomas is, why
Clock's
would you
ticking.
Want to
now
stay?
You want a shot at a Super Bowl somewhere?
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, like that's to me like the end of Argo, one of the people trying to get out of Iran saying, no, I'm good. Ben Affleck, you leave a seat open for someone else. I'm good here.
It's admirable. I mean, it's pretty cool that you would have a guy who would have that kind of loyalty.
And... Yeah, no kidding, but he's just insane.
Yeah. How about those seven first-round picks he laid out and how they've all struggled? That's just incredible. Seven first-round picks in the last 3 years.
What's that called, Stockholm Syndrome, when you start to build up love for your captor? That's what that is.
Stockholm Syndrome. Joe Thomas story. Yikes. Justin Gilbert, you know, we were raving about him from Oklahoma State, the corner. Like, the Steelers need to get this guy. Of course, he goes in the top 10. They have no shot at him. He's behind just Johnson Batamosi. He can't even get on the field in year two. You think the Steelers' picks have had some problems. So
that is one thing about drafting a corner high. You miss big, you miss bad. It's almost like, well, not quite, but it's, you know.
Almost like drafting an offensive lineman high.
A quarterback. Like, if you miss on a quarterback high, you are screwed. And one step beneath that is missing big on a corner.
Yeah. Well, there you have it. He didn't give any insight into who's going to play, but he did basically, you know,
he agrees with you, Ken. Manziel's the way to go. The rest of the season be damned.
Except Pettine just doesn't believe in him and trust him. And
well, Pettine got to worry about his own job, too, some. I mean, you got to win some. And I think there's something to that. If the guy's more interested in being out, you know, with his honeys and his champagne instead of studying the playbook or film, and he doesn't, you know, he's not working hard enough to get better. As a coach, how to reward him for that? You're going to let him develop at your expense, losing games? I'm sure he'd develop. I'm sure that, you know, it would be a learning experience. But I go along with that. I believe you got to earn that learning experience.
What do you think, Tim? Who would you start if you're the coach and or GM of that team?
If I'm the coach, I'm starting McCown. I'm starting whoever gives me the best chance of keeping my job. If I start McCown and the upper management says, if you start McCown, you're going to get fired, I'll say, okay, then I'll start right. Manziel.
Yeah.
All right, so they start Manziel. He sucks. And you know what? You're going to get fired anyway. So you're screwed if you do. You're screwed if you don't.
But they're banged up too, and McCown might not be healthy enough to play. So quite the game here at Heinz Field. As you said, guys, this will be a tough one to select tomorrow in Pick and Pork with 4.5, I think, is our line that we're going with. Steelers 4.5-point favorites. Another football game we've got to pick tomorrow is Pitt and Duke. And in the Giovanni's Pizza news, the Duke quarterback's not healthy and is questionable for the week. That per our Jerry DePaula, who's on the scene. Thomas Cirque is their quarterback. He's questionable with an upper body injury. And they won't make a decision before Friday, so keep that in mind.
Doesn't look like Connor's coming back.
Yeah, that's the other thing. He said Connor was not quite ready to return this week. But the surgically repaired MCL is healed, and he's getting antsy. So
getting antsy. All right.
Oh, sorry. Doctors have not told him that the MCL is sufficiently healed for this week. But
when did Cirque get hurt? That must have been a practice thing this week, right? I didn't read anything about that on Monday or Tuesday from their last game.
I guess it was from the game, Jerry what? Said.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, maybe they didn't practice Monday or they didn't mention it. That's a big question mark on that game, too, because he's kind of a dual-threat kind of guy. I think he could give Pitt some problems if he's healthy.
Yes, he could. SportsTalk@TribWeb.com to reach the program. Ken Laird, Guy Junker, and Tim Benz. A couple emails we'll get to our Pirates Talk here with Jim Benedict in the trade, and a couple of rule changes possibilities, one in baseball and one in hockey, we have to get to before the hour is done, plus some fantastic audio from the Pens game last night. Back to the Penguins, though. Randall emails. He says, was wondering, this guy's watching the game, has Malkin had the better career than Crosby to this point? All these guys that were brought in to play with Sid, Kuna, Tosa, Guerin, Sullivan, Stempniak, Neil, Aginla, and Kessel. Neil, for Hornquist to play with 87. All this pattern, they shortchanged 71 to give these guys to Sid, but who has done more with less? Which player has gotten more out of these winger acquisitions? To me, it's 71 every time.
I think you're overlooking who Malkin had early in his career. Sikora, and then he had Neil for a long stretch.
Yeah, it's true. He did play with Neil. Was that right away, or did they? Neil was with Sid to start?
Well, it doesn't really matter, does it? I mean, they're both wound up with Gino.
Well, like the our view was that Kessel was brought in to play with Sid.
Right.
He started there, and then he, like Neil, ended up with Gino, and I guess the email is right. He's played better there.
But you're arguing both sides of the coin at the same time.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you're suggesting that Gino played with lesser wings because all these guys were brought in to play with Sid, but then they didn't work out with Sid, but who did they wind up with? Gino.
Yeah.
In a lot of cases.
Yeah, he won the playoff MVP that year, so when they won the cup, so that's one way to look at it. But
well, I think that's revisionist history if you want to start thinking that way. I mean, they've both been very good players at various times. Sid's fall off has been more recent, and so I think that clouds your thing. You forget how great Sid was when he was young and how he dominated games. I think he was the better player. It may not turn out now 5 more years down the road. Maybe that holds more water, but I just think, you know, pre-Sid's concussion, I don't think there was any argument, in my opinion.
But it's hard to say on the other side of it that Sid has had a significantly better career than Malkin, right? I mean, it's almost impossible to separate them totally.
Yeah, right.
Either way. Sean in Canada, emails the program. Says, on the concussion front, guys, Bradshaw and Swanee seem to be doing okay, and I see all these NFL films clips of them getting pile-driven and atomic dropped on the field back in their playing day.
Well, the thing about it is, and Swan had concussions. In fact, it was part of the issue. Think about it. Swan only played the 8 years and got out mostly because of head injuries. And as wide receivers and quarterbacks, even though you're open to violent hits, and I'm not claiming to be a CTE expert, but I've read a lot about it, and it is more multiple blows. It doesn't have to be getting hit on the head with a hammer one time. It's more getting hit on the head with a 2-liter bottle of Coke 5,000 times. Linemen who every single snap are having helmet-to-helmet contact are like Mike Webster. Now, Swan had concussions, Bradshaw had concussions. Mike Webster never had a diagnosed concussion, and we've all seen the TV show with his brain and how spotted up it was. So I don't think there's an exact answer to it yet as they continue to research it,
but
that's the best reason I could give you, that repeated blow after blow after blow, even if not giving you a full-fledged concussion, is what causes this disease more than, a couple of times a year where you really get pulverized.
You mentioned Dorsett, right? He was at Heinz Field this past weekend. There's a guy that's fighting it. Sean emails, he says, I'm originally from a small town outside of Johnstown, guys. There's another Sean, not Sean of Canada. Graduated with a class of 160 kids in 95. Our high school football team had 90 kids on it because half the boys in every class wanted to play.
Yeah.
Now the class size has increased to over 200, yet the football team has half of what we did, 40 kids. And a lot of the guys I grew up with don't allow their sons to play, or they're just not interested because they think it's barbaric and adds to cultural negativity by espousing a culture of competition. Read into that what you will, but if the trend continues, I think areas like South Florida,
I believe, is what Ken was going for there.
Yeah, I don't. You know what? I had a conversation once. My one nephew was starting to play tackle football. Tim, probably. Let's see how old he is.
I think we got Ken back. It's you probably, back there, Ken?
It's probably like nope. 10, 15 years ago. And I was talking with Don Yanessa, who was a good friend of mine at one time, and he says he didn't think kids. Now, this is a high school football coach, a successful one, one you would think would want every kid within a 100-mile radius of his school playing tackle football from the time they're born. He said, no need for tackle football until you're at least in your teens. You want to learn the game. You want to learn the plays, the formations, learn about the game. There's no reason you can't play flag football until you're at least somewhat physically developed. And I don't know about what that guy wrote about the culture of football or why that would turn people off. But my son was very active playing almost every sport growing up, played some soccer, played some grade school basketball, played baseball all the way till he got finished with high school. But hockey's always been his thing. Now, he's had two concussions playing D3 college hockey the last 2 years, and I've gotten to the point where I don't want him playing anymore. He's got a year left of college. But he's going to be one of these guys that plays in a men's beer league as he gets older. He just loves playing the game. But two concussions, he just got 5 stitches in his forehead. I as a parent, I've reached a point. As much as I've loved watching him play, and I coached him when he was a mite and a squirt and everything, I've had enough. I don't want to. He's not going to play pro. He's not going to make millions of dollars doing it, and the risk isn't worth it anymore.
The flag football thing versus the tackle football thing on a youth level, though. I mean, are they moving fast enough to administer the concussions that we're concerned about? I mean, these little kids with all this equipment, are they really slamming into each other that hard that they're...
Well, I'm just telling you what Yanessa said. And when you're talking about fears, I don't think fears of parents having and letting their kids play, I don't think this is something that's just come about in the last couple of years. This was 15 years ago that I had this discussion with them.
Yeah, I wonder when it comes to, like, you don't...
And it goes back to this repeated blow. They are clonking helmets, even if they're like bobbleheads out there banging into each other. They are clonking. I mean, if you've watched any, what was that show on about Texas, the maniac Texas football?
Friday Night Lights,
I mean, some of those guys were unbelievably intense with,
I think tackling would be the biggest thing you would have to adjust to if you came up learning flag and then had to adjust to tackle. I mean, to be a defensive back, not even like running through tackles. You can learn that pretty quickly. You're just tough enough to run through a tackle. But breaking down and being in proper position versus flailing for a flag. Like, I still play flag football, and that's the most different thing if you've ever played tackle and then you play flag is, you have to come up with angles and you sort of wait until you can reach out and make a move. That would be the hardest thing is, the tackling techniques as you get ready to tackle would be the hardest thing to teach, I would think.
But you wonder how much cumulative effect the headbanging, if you're going back to someone, if you're looking at a Mike Webster, who I assume played, tackle football as a kid, how much do the blows to the head as you're growing up add to your total accumulation to give you CTE.
To go Steigerwald here for a minute, because he always wants people to get rid of the helmets and take the face masks off the helmets and so forth. And that might, the advancement of the technology of the helmet has actually been counterproductive, because it enforces your strength that you can go out there and knock people silly. And what you're actually doing now is you're increasing the concussions because people are playing with abandon due to the good technology. The opposite of that argument is, the offensive lineman. The offensive lineman back in the day with the lesser helmets, when the head slap was still allowed and things of that sort, they probably were, with those repeated blows, getting more and more concussions. I think the better helmets now, when you're, like you said, Guy, just hitting heads all the time, it still helps the lineman, I think, now more than it does the safeties and the wide receivers and so forth, where Steigerwald's theory comes into play.
Sorry to cut Sean's off. He said he thinks it's going to be a niche sport in 20 years, except for areas like maybe Florida, Texas, and SoCal. See if he's right. Chris in Boulder, Colorado. Great win last night for the Penguins, guys. Excellent to see them break through the string of no third-period comebacks. I did think the Bo Bennett first-line experiment was a failure. Hornquist belongs there, and he will produce. And Chris would like to see Christopher Letang as trade bait. All the skill in the world does not excuse his lack of maturity. That's the one guy who's getting some heat this morning from a couple of our emailers. His petulance was what somebody put on him.
Bennett was a minus two, I think, wasn't he? No, Ian Cole was a minus two. I take that back. I agree with that, but I don't think it was a great night for the first line overall, but they got a goal a minute into the game. They sort of set the tempo for the whole night.
If they get rid of Letang, they're going to need one more guy to move the puck, plus have faith in Pouliot.
Well, think about that. I think one of their biggest problems right now offensively, one is not bearing opportunities. Last night was a perfect example of a game which they had some chances. Whether it was Letang hitting the post, Hornquist missing, not getting anything from in close twice, Sid, firing a shot from almost point blank that went wide by 2 inches. I mean, they had some chances. But I think that getting the puck from the time they take possession in their own end until they cross the blue line seems to me an eternity compared to the way it used to be. The gathering of the puck, moving it up ice, the transition from defense to the forwards, it's not good, and he's one of their better players at doing that, despite everybody's lack of patience with him for his behavior right now.
Reports from Cranberry are that Fleury is practicing despite the swelling under the eye and the stitches.
I saw a great shot on the NHL Iron Network Man. Of the blood rolling down his cheek through his mask. Of course, we were at the game. I didn't notice that last night.
Chris Letang, by the way, is synonym with concussion, so you're going to trade him. You're getting a dime on the dollar at this point, aren't you?
It's not just the concussions. It's the
and the
stroke
play, yeah.
And everything else.
Yeah, oh yeah.
No, I think a lot of people would gamble on his play, figuring they can straighten him out or he could be productive.
It's funny, Ken. I guess I shouldn't go here. Are we doing baseball next here?
Yeah.
Okay, because I just saw another interesting story about Melanson that I wanted to bring up.
Is it a DK reference?
No.
There was a report yesterday that he was not going to be traded from day on.
Let's
talk about
that
too. Ryan, one more Penguins email from Ryan. He says, I'm glad the Pens gutted it out last night. It was the first third period comeback in two freaking years.
Is that like
however,
freaking four?
1 year, yeah. 10 months, but who's quibbling?
Can Fleury and Letang not choke against Montreal on a consistent basis, though? This goes back to 2010 when those two and Mad Max were the worst guys on the ice, except Gonchar shining his irons at the blue line in Game 7. We get they speak French here. Stop going poo in the bed. That six-hole goal that Fleury gave up was the worst since Philly in 2012. We got a little French from Pierre last night, too. And you guys missed this on the TV, but listening to how – I don't know if Mike kept the Milbury reaction at the end of it on it, but he was quite disgusted at this finale.
Merci beaucoup, Marc-André Fleury. Félicitations, mon homme.
Merci beaucoup.
All right.
Back to the English portion of the program.
Yeah.
All right, so I gave some bad
Liam was just disgusted. Just disgusted.
That was tremendous. Pierre also got a very good he waited like 5 minutes and he went into the Mike Condon Yale background like in great detail. He was fired up and ready to get on the road of junior hockey and the Canadian scouts knew this guy could play.
Nobody plays the family tree game like Pierre McGuire. Like when Pierre's done with hockey, whenever that might be, his next job is going to be selling that genealogy website or that book. Ancestry. Ancestry.com. That's right. Pierre Maguire for Ancestry.com.
Only French Canadians, though.
If you're from Central America or South America or Asia, we can't help you. I'm sorry.
No,
we can't help you. Africa, right. Yeah, you don't count. I'm sorry.
Coming up next, some Bucko Talk, our hot stove segment of the day, I guess. Jim Benedict.
Quotes here from the dear Neil Huntington as well.
In regards to Melanson?
Everybody.
Ooh. Okay, that's coming up next. This is Trib Live Radio. Ken Laird, Guy Junker, Tim Benz, all brought to you by Duffy's Beer. Josh Taylor along, and he'll join us very shortly.
Duffy's Beer and much more in Pleasant Hills. 412-653-BEER. See all of our weekly specials at duffysbeer.com. Bud Light, and Coors Light 30-pack cans, only $18.99. Plus Miller Light and Yingling 24-pack cans for only $14.99. Winter and Christmas beers are arriving daily. Give the gift of good cheer this Christmas with a gift card to Duffy's, your South Hills headquarters for beer, pop, snacks, vapes, home brewing supplies, and all your party and tailgating needs for this week's game. Duffy's Beer and much more in Pleasant Hills, online at duffysbeer.com.
Cuba yesterday, just as an aside, and now that the embargo's been lifted by Obama, there's a story at MLB.com about this.
You're going to give me cigars for Christmas.
Well, that too. 100 players have left Cuba in search of a major league contract in the last 12 months. They're talking about this one guy in particular, some 24-year-old Yasiel Sierra, who can be a top-of-the-rotation pitcher. But anyway, I guess there's all these free agents now from Cuba that are available, but you still have to go through the international signing period and not exceed your bonus slot. So this is kind of a complex thing involved with baseball. Now, there are certain teams that can't sign anybody this year that cost more than $300,000 because they've gone over the last few years, which includes the Cubs, Dodgers, Giants, and Royals. But other teams,
Cubs,
like the Pirates,
Dodgers, Royals, and who?
Giants. They cannot sign any pool-eligible prospects for over $300,000 for the next two international signing periods after they exceeded their bonus this year. Other teams like the Angels, Diamondbacks, Rays, Red Sox, and Yankees are already in the maximum penalty for blowing past their pools last year.
Right. That's what I was going to say next. So guys like Yosmani Tomas and
Yoan Moncada. Yeah. But anyway, so there's like 100 guys out there, and the Pirates could go after one of these. Now, these are 19 to 23-year-old Cubans, but they haven't blown through their pool. I wonder if they're going to go from South Korea now back to Cuba. This is the year to go after Cubans, right? After the embargo, and it's easier to get players, and there's 100 of them that are ready to depart. So keep that on your radar as this signing period is, I guess it's underway, right? I don't know when the international period goes for it. I think it starts coming up soon and then goes for a whole year, you know, and then they reboot it again. This other thing, Tim, you wanted to get into in the baseball frame was rule changes possibly coming up.
Yeah, they're actually talking about the sliding rules. I hope that Joe Torre's seen all the plays now.
Well, of course he did because it involved a high-profile team in the playoffs. He went back and watched
that's right.
Gung injury.
Yeah.
That was nice of Joe to really take that on.
Push the envelope.
But what do you think? Is this all talk?
It's so simple. It's so easy. All you got to do is take the line out of the rule book that disqualifies the line before it. Like, go to section 6.1, erase that line, and just stick with section 5.9 that says you will have the out impacted on the base runner going to first base if you slide outside of the baseline. That's it. It's that simple. You will incur the out for the batter going to first base if you slide outside of the baseline in an effort to break up a double play.
Did the catcher thing affect how they're going to word this or enforce it? Because we had all these catcher issues 2 years ago. Then they stopped calling it, basically, this year. They were, like, too aggressive on it. They had to tweak the rules. Maybe you're right. Maybe it's as simple as just scratching a line out of there. But they're not going to take the takeout slide out of baseball, right? That's not going to happen.
Why not? Why can't they?
I mean, I guess they could. I guess the international guys play that way, including Gung, who got hurt.
All these guys that we just talked about, we just spent 10 minutes talking about the international signing period. What, they don't have baseball over there because there's no takeout slide?
I don't know. What do you think, Guy? Can you get rid of it altogether? Just go back to any contact? And
I would not do that. I think you can change the rule the way Tim said. You can make it cut and dried. You have to slide to the base, and you have to slide early enough. If you slide late, you can police it before you make the drastic change. If there's still a ton of guys getting hurt, then maybe you change it more completely in a couple of years. I don't think you have to eliminate it completely.
The quote from Torrey, and this story is in the MLB notebook today in the Trib. We don't want to have guys carried off the field. Obviously, you can't lose sight of what the game is about. You don't want somebody just not trying to get to second base and not trying to keep the inning going. It's a thin line that you have to walk, and that's why it's really tough to put pen to paper. ... especially if the player is from New York. End quote. Oh, sorry. I embellished there a little bit.
Yeah, different roles for different teams.
But, I mean, it's really not that hard. They've got it written down. They just need to take out the line in the two rules later that battles the line that they had already written earlier in the rule book.
Yeah. All right, keep an eye out for that. Also, thanks to Doug, one of our tweeps, who points out, per Peter Gammons, four people, according to Peter, have insisted that Aroldis Chapman will be moved by the end of the weekend. So Chapman will be going. And there you go, Guy. We'll be getting closer to 1 a.m. at the bar then, if
that's right.
Truly the case, once Chapman goes.
Closing time.
Also, the NHL equipment rule changes. They were talking about this during intermission reports last night with Bob McKenzie, and he addressed this push to... He said basically they're not going to make the nets bigger, guys, so you're going to be happy there. There's too much opposition to it. People are hesitant to change the nets even by a little bit. And he even said, though, that they want change in the goalie equipment, but the Players Association is fighting back big time. They're going to bring up all these potential drawbacks, including the pads getting lower and the susceptibility to injuries, and it's a real fight. Now, I don't know if it's a staged fight for the next CBA or whatever, that they're going to, you know how that goes. It's like ammunition for the Players Association. We'll give you this, but we want this in return. But it's not going to happen easy, it sounds like.
Goals per game average through this point of the season.
Yeah, he said last night, by the way, they're lowest in 10 years at this point in the year.
Only 5.5 per game last year at this time, 5.32 per game this year at this time. But go back 10 years, and it's down from 6.16 goals per game to 5.32.
There it is.
Almost a whole goal a game.
Yeah, that's pretty significant.
Quick update from Penguin practice. Seismic changes when it comes to defensive pairings.
Silaps is back?
They are trying anything and everything with the D pairings. Mata and Dumoulin, Mata and Letang, Scuderi and Cole. I'm just reading Twitter here from various people. They're bouncing around all over the place. Seismic, Ken.
I don't want to hear that, Tim. Let's just, it's going to change.
They've given up 8 goals in 2 games. It's time to panic.
Nope, insignificant. Waste of tweets. Coming up in the noon hour.
No Malkin or Cullen, too, just FYI.
Glad to see you're coming around to my way of thinking, Ken.
We'll bring Josh Taylor into the fold. Talking Steelers and Penguins for the most part today. Was it a signature win for the Penguinos last night? And Steelers quarterbacks, Landry, short leash, long leash, Mike Vick, any consideration for it? Got our Bucko fix in. Derek Schooley's going to join us at 12:40 today. Robert Morris hockey coach. And Mike Graw in the 1 o'clock hour of the radio program. Chris Peek as well with Panther Lair. And we got the James Conner injury news in there, right? He is doubtful. Yeah, we got to that last segment. Just a quick reminder, Jerry DePaula mentioned that no James Conner this weekend. But the bad news I find to be somewhat interesting, that he's out of the walking boot. We'll discuss these Steelers quarterbacks, reset that for you coming up top of the hour. All brought to you by Giovanni's Pizza, and we're brought to you by Duffy's Beer in Pleasant Hills.
The aorta is still in a wrap, though.
He hasn't played on turf yet either, so give that some time. Four Horsemen next.
Duffy's Beer and much more in Pleasant Hills. 412-653-BEER. See all of our weekly specials at duffysbeer.com. Bud Light, and Coors Light 30-pack cans only $18.99. Plus Miller Lite and Yuengling 24-pack cans for only $14.99. Winter and Christmas beers are arriving daily. Give the gift of good cheer this Christmas with a gift card to Duffy's, your South Hills headquarters for beer, pop, snacks, vapes, home brewing supplies, and all your party and tailgating needs for this week's game. Duffy's Beer and much more in Pleasant Hills, online at duffysbeer.com. Before every Steelers game, don't miss the Mike and Dave's Black and Gold pregame show, the best and most comprehensive Pittsburgh pregame show, taking you right up to kickoff.
We're going to be here all day, baby. I like this kind of party.
All the Steelers insiders from the Trib and exclusive Steeler player interviews, plus live reports from the stadiums, all right here on Trib Live Radio. The Mike and Dave's Black and Gold pregame show is brought to you by Mike and Dave's Italian Bread Place, Deli and Catering in Greentree, and Mike and Dave's Boardwalk Sandwich Shop in Brentwood on Sawmill Run Boulevard, right across from Getco. Go online to theitalianbreadplace.com and watch the super sub being made.